Welcome back to Canna Week, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impact these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Abby Kaufman. This week's episode is dedicated to resource efficiency and the evolving cannabis market, which is why we have asked the CEO and co-founder of Grow Generation, the largest hydroponic supplier in the country, to join us today, bringing with him over 20 years of experience as a securities attorney and independent portfolio manager. Darren Lambert, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Abby. Thanks for having me. And you guys do a great job reporting on the cannabis industry. Thank you for everything you do.
Well, thank you so much. And as always, we are also joined today for our in-house expert, John Caggia, New Frontier Data's Chief Knowledge Officer. John, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be back, Abby. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So to kick things off, we're going to start with a question. Just how much water does a cannabis operation use? An upcoming report from Research Innovation Institute, New Frontier Data, and the Berkeley Cannabis Center offers comprehensive analysis, insights, and strategic recommendations on water use and sustainability in cannabis cultivation. A recent article by WaterTech Online explains that the question of how much water does a cannabis operation use can be a vital one for cultivation. Darren, in your years of experience working alongside cultivators, how important would you say, from your observations, water efficiency is when it comes to cannabis cultivation?
Well, Abby, in this day and age, water efficiency is tremendously important. As we all know, California is the number one cannabis producing state in our country right now. We certainly have read for many years the water shortages going on in the California markets. And a lot of the water shortages are coming from really from the outdoor illegal grows in California, which is certainly getting under control in this day and age. It's possible to reduce water use by almost 60 to 90% if growing in greenhouses, indoors, hydroponically. It's what GrowGen specializes in. We specialize in indoor growing hydroponically. It creates less waste, mitigates climate risks. It adds to sustainable profiles. Makes it easier to meet regulatory requirements. So certainly when you come to GrowGen, when you meet with our grow pros, we suggest indoor growing, climate control, hydroponic growing, saving water, saving, and again, saving the economy.
Absolutely, very well put. And so John, I know you've been working pretty extensively about on this upcoming water report. So is there anything you'd like to add about the importance of water efficiency in cannabis cultivation?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that this process working through this report has really been a revelation on is this idea of the role that legalization is playing in making or driving sustainability in cannabis cultivation. You know, broadly speaking, when cannabis was largely illegal and being produced in ways that were unregulated, there was no need to really care about how much water you were using, because it really wasn't either a business imperative driving it, costs were really high and you could cover that in your margins, or B, you could be drawing your water from illegal sources, which avoided kind of the overhead costs associated with wasteful water use. But transitioning to a legal environment where business owners do have an imperative, do have an incentive to kind of measure the cost and impact of all of the inputs that they're using, and where with something like water, there's some really basic things that you can do to very quickly reduce your water use. Even to Darren's point, whether that is looking at just the operational metrics inside your facilities. You know, we've been talking to growers who, for them, just making the transition from things like hand watering to drip irrigation, let alone some of the new sensor-based technologies that can really kind of dial in precisely how much water you're applying to each plant. There's phenomenal opportunities to drive water use, but in the unregulated market, there wasn't a lot of consideration of this. And it's only now that legalization is driving greater operational, greater focus on operational efficiency, that we're able to, one, collect data that allows us to create these comparative benchmarks. And then two, identify all of the ways in which growers can integrate this and share that knowledge back to the market. So it's a really exciting time, and particularly given how explosively the legal market is going to be growing over the next 5 to 10 years, this is a really, really critical time to have this conversation so that as new states are legalizing, as new growers are coming online, they're incorporating these practices into their operations and building in these efficiencies from the very beginning.
Absolutely. And so speaking of efficiencies, I know we were talking about water, but cultivators also have to consider energy costs. And so as the market matures, efficiency overall, energy and water is becoming increasingly essential. So Darren, I know you had touched on energy usage as well, but from your experience and your point of view, what role does technology play in promoting increased efficiency in the industry?
Well, kind of like water and like energy, technology is key to increasing efficiencies through automation. What you're seeing right now is a tremendous push to LED lighting versus double-ended energy, sucking lights. You're seeing energy credits coming right now, even from the large utility companies. People costs are almost 2/3 of cultivation costs. And you're starting to see that drop also. 19% of cultivators do not use any automation right now. And if you start to take the illegal growers and the outside growers, those numbers double and triple quickly. Some of the low-hanging fruits for automation, lighting automation, which you're seeing through LEDs, irrigation, which you're seeing, which is helping water, environmental controls, fertigation. Currently, only between 30 and 60% of these functions are automated at facilities across the country. So there's so much to be learned right now in this industry. And by coming to a hydroponic store at GrowGen, this is what we're teaching. This is what you're seeing right now, in the big MSOs and the large single state operators. You're seeing automation. Years ago, when you walked into a facility, plants were on the ground. There was no dehumidification. There was no irrigation. There was no fertigation. People were walking around watering plants. Those days are gone. You've seen the evolution, really. You've seen cannabis going towards big ag. And what you're seeing is people are controlling costs that way. They're controlling energy usage, is one of the biggest parts of growing and becoming profitable. And we see this continuing throughout this decade. And one of the things certainly that we also know also with federal legalization will come education, will also come requirements to grow LED lights, which you're starting to see on a state-by-state basis, opposed to using double-ended lighting. You're seeing vertical gardening. So you're seeing all these different innovations really to increase yields and to lower costs. And most of those costs are coming through energy. They're also coming through water, and they're coming from our grids that we really, which our economy can't give right now. So automation is tremendous, and you're seeing it. You're seeing it now, and you're seeing it continuing.
Absolutely, yeah. It seems like there's definitely some common underlying themes there between the water efficiency and just efficiency overall. John, is there anything you'd like to add about the energy efficiency side of things with cultivation and technology?
So Darren, question for you. I mean, you guys have been doing this for a while, and you've really seen the evolution in this idea of addressing energy efficiency. I'm curious, what proportion would you say are now using LEDs versus double-ended lights relative to where it was, 3, 4, 5 years ago?
I think if we look at our sales even last year, LED lighting made up a bigger percentage of our lighting sales last year, opposed to 2019 when almost LED sales were non-existent. So we're seeing a tremendous push state by state to LEDs. We believe this year LED lighting can make up almost 10% of our business. So, we're anticipating over $20 million of LEDs will leave our stores this year. We're just seeing tremendous upgrade cycles. And one of the nice things, you're seeing energy credits and large ones coming from energy companies right now. So they're supporting this change from these double-ended lights to the LEDs. And I think the growers are becoming certainly more knowledgeable how to grow with LEDs. It's a learning curve, and I think they're getting through that learning curve, and they're looking for these energy savings throughout. Usually the LEDs are more expensive lightings to purchase than the double-ended, but with energy credits and the savings on electricity, you're seeing a one-year payback on the difference of cost between the two products.
And also to that point, do you see any difference in cultivators that are considering starting or versus established cultivators as far as the efficiency considerations with the impact they're having on them, or are potential prospective cultivators going in already with these considerations compared to ones that with pots on the floor type of scenario?
I think it's just all upgrade cycles. What you're seeing, Abby, and I think you'll see throughout this decade is upgrade cycles. You're seeing it with dosing, you're seeing it with fertigation, you're seeing it, you're even seeing more energy efficiencies with dehumidification and air conditioning and heating. You're seeing it straight around. So you're certainly seeing a move toward energy efficiency and cultivation. And we don't see that stopping. And it's, the innovations are great because, you know, it's wonderful that you're seeing all these upgrade cycles, bringing people into our stores. It's given the industry certainly a big boost. And you're seeing capital come into this industry. And with capital, people are looking to save, you know, save costs down the future. So they're putting a dollar in today to save $2 tomorrow, which they didn't do in the past.
I think that's such a critical point. The lessons that the newly legal states will be able to take from the existing markets, I think, puts newly developed markets at such a great advantage on resource efficiency.
Yeah, Jonathan, yeah. I think what you're also seeing, I mean, you're starting to hear that there are going to be requirements in certain states, that there are certain states that are going to outlaw cannabis growing with double-ended lights. So they're going to require LEDs. So what you're going to see really is predominantly you're going to see the double-ended lights in the illegal markets when you're seeing, you know, the commercial markets, the legalized markets where people are using LEDs, where people are using fertigation, where people are using, you know, more energy efficient products. And it's something when, you know, it's even something when you're looking, you know, at the government and, you know, kind of pushing towards legalization, some of the reasons for it. And it's certainly a perfect reason. You know, it's a whole nother aspect that people don't look at, that, you know, when you're looking at the MSOs and the large single state operators, you know, they have to, they're required to, again, start using more energy efficient ways to grow.
Absolutely. Is there anything you'd like to add, John, before we move on to the, away from the efficiency side of the supply chain?
Well, I think maybe the one thing that I would note is, we always tell stakeholders, particularly further back in the supply chain, so producers and processors, to plan for where the market is going, not where it currently is. And, you know, as we've seen downward price pressure in virtually every legal market, as the markets mature, they become more competitive. You know, there's a lot of easy steps that one can take at the beginning of establishing a facility to ensure that you're thinking maximally about how to optimize your efficiency, or at least that you're building in the flexibility so that as you grow, you can make some of these changes in a dynamic way without having to completely rebuild the entire enterprise. That was actually a major challenge with the earliest legal producers in places like Colorado, the people who rushed in and built warehouses that were really, really energy inefficient. And then it took them a long time before they were able to go through that upgrade cycle. It sounds like there's a lot of those who are going through that upgrade cycle now, but we're 6 years into this market. So for growers who are in new states, particularly those who are going to be in states that will legalize over the next couple of years, incorporating these best practices into your operational design early will pay huge dividends over time, particularly as the market becomes really, really competitive, because it allows you to maintain, you know, a really competitive cost structure relative to those who have operations that are less inefficient and who aren't structured to make energy efficient improvements without massive capital investments.
And John, that's one of GrowGen's missions for sure, to provide end-to-end solutions that deliver cost savings through energy efficiencies, through lighting, less water, hydroponic growing. So that's the mission that you will get from GrowGen, and it's a mission that will continue at GrowGen.
Wonderful. Those are both excellent points. I'm glad that so many industry operators are already thinking ahead towards where we're going. So another decision and division between the cultivation side of things, a recent article from MJ Biz Daily, it was titled "Oregon Marijuana Firms Enjoy Booming Market Fueled by a Pandemic, Consumers Shunning Illicit Suppliers." So according to a recent report conducted by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, cannabis production increased 78% since 2019, while the amount of cannabis sold grew by 150%. At the same time, cultivators have found themselves in a dual market, choosing between selling flower to retailers or directly to processors. So demand for cannabis has grown substantially. So Darren, from what you've seen, how have established cultivators adjusted to increased demand?
In a couple different ways, certainly hopefully growing more. But some of the differences, flower gives the cultivator the difference to differentiate product and maintain margins, create brand loyalty. using core competency while giving it to cultivators does not. So what you're seeing right now is certainly through the vertical integration, the MSOs, certainly flower keeps pricing. Growing biomass to go to processor, more automation dependent with slimmer margins, results in stable demand, but risk loss of control. So there's this right now, again, you're seeing, you know, dependent upon, you know, what cultivators you're working with and what MSOs. The MSOs are building brands. Even some of the larger single state operators are building brands. So there's certainly a difference. And, you know, it just right now, you know, I think in certain states, you know, demand is certainly, it's there. And the cultivators are meeting the demand. But it's really on a state-by-state basis.
Okay. And thank you for that. John, would you care to speak of some of the reasons behind this increased demand or what your analysis shows for these trends with increasing demand as it relates to cultivation?
Yeah, you know, the pandemic has been absolutely devastating to the economy and to kind of our social lives, but it's been really good for cannabis demand. And there's a few reasons for that. One, broadly speaking, is people are home more and have more time to consume in the leisure of their homes. If your social calendar has been massively disrupted, people are getting more time at home, and particularly those who are living in legal regulated markets where you have access to a rich diversity of products. It's given more people time to consume. And then second, given how disruptive the pandemic has been to the mental health of a lot of people, you know, we're seeing consumers reporting that they're using cannabis more frequently to help deal with the stress and the anxiety and the sleep disorders that have been stimulated by the pandemic, and which are at, you know, record levels, at least in our modern society. And so there's this kind of twin convergence of factors, one with time at home and two, the kind of helping manage the mental health challenges created by the pandemic that have helped boost demand. But interestingly, as we're looking through our consumer data, we don't think that the current levels of demand are going to revert to pre-pandemic levels when life reverts to normal. I think they will stay elevated. They may not stay as elevated as they currently are, but I don't think they're going to go back down as low as they were pre-pandemic, because we'll have had by that point nearly 2 years for people to really normalize cannabis use into their lives. So the outlook, I think, for the legal market is very, very strong. And, you know, the kind of demand that we're seeing for legally produced cannabis, to Darren's point, to both for processors and for the flower market, I think will remain elevated. And so one of the things we're going to be observing is what role that plays in the way cannabis cultivation gets done, both in terms of the scale of individual businesses, as well as the consolidation of operators, so kind of multi-operational businesses through mergers and acquisitions to help drive further economies of scale and increase capacity building, particularly amongst the multi-state operators who are very, very quickly becoming kind of the giants of the space. And so maybe, Darren, to your point, one of the things that I'd be curious to hear is, you know, how different is it building a very large, or what are some of the key considerations as you're building a very large scale cultivation facility, you know, the 50,000 plus square foot type space versus where much of the industry started in places like Colorado at the 5,000 to 10,000 square foot warehouse environment?
You know, I think building it, John, you know, a lot of them are doing it in phases still. So what you're still seeing is a lot of phased build outs. In new states that are coming on board, you know, they're going room by room by room. So certainly, you know, it's certainly cutting the risk in a lot of places. You're starting to see, you know, we're seeing as many refresh right now as we see in new build outs in, you know, certainly in more mature states. But when you go down to states like Oklahoma that, you know, where there's a lot of small 5,000 to 10,000 square foot spaces, I mean, they're running rampant down there. There's more licensing in Oklahoma than there is in the rest of, you know, than in any other state in the country right now. I mean, the MSOs are buying more than they're, I think, more than they're opening and then refreshing. So, you know, you're seeing in really more mature states that, you know, that in Colorado, there's not that many new facilities coming on board. You're seeing more expansion. You're seeing more, you know, again, more refresh. They're going from double-ended to LEDs. In the market, you know, as everyone knows, has been, you're hearing from the MSOs, you're hearing also what John just said, you know, consumption is certainly on the uprise. And, you know, another reason for that is, you know, it's more awareness. You saw a green sweep back in November. You're seeing a Democratic in the Senate right now. So, you know, the question that people always ask is, if legalization comes, you know, where's consumption going to come? Where's consumption going to go? Is it going to skyrocket? There's still hundreds of companies, if not thousands, there's still drug tests for cannabis. There are still thousands, probably millions of Americans that don't smoke cannabis because it's federally illegal. So, you know, we do believe that, you know, through education, through hopefully legalization, that consumption rates are going to go off the charts, which is going to lead to, you know, it's going to lead to certainly build outs throughout the country. And you're going to need to see regulation. You're going to need to see energy regulation and water and everything else, because this industry is just starting. So it's such in the infancy right now that, you know, there could be 100 years of growth within this industry, as you saw from the wine and spirits industry, which is still growing.
Absolutely. And you had mentioned some of the reasons why a cultivator may prefer to sell to a retailer versus a processor. Several wonderful points made there. But speaking of consumption, as consumers have more access to cannabis and their product preferences are changing, do you see that impacting cultivators' choice between selling to a retailer, the flower, or to a processor?
Well, I think most of what you're seeing sold to the processors is more of the shake. It's more of the low quality cannabis. You know, the high quality flower is usually going into the dispensaries. What's going to processors usually is cannabis that's going to be ground down to oil and made into waxes and oils. So you're really not seeing that high quality. Individuals still, when they walk into dispensaries, look at the cannabis, look at the colors, look at the strains. And you're not seeing that when you send it to processors. So, you know, I'm still of the belief that, you know, the quality is going to dispensaries being sold as flower, and the non-quality is going to processors to process.
John, anything you'd like to add with that?
Just a question to Darren on that. Are you finding that, at least for the growers who are producing for processors, their operational kind of design or the way they're growing the cannabis is different, the requirements for the room set up is different from those who are trying to grow the higher quality bud for retail? You see kind of the operational differences there.
I think what you'll see is when looking what's going to the processors, it's not usually the medical grade cannabis. So it's more outdoor grown cannabis. It's more greenhouse grown cannabis. It's not the cannabis that's coming from the, you know, expensive facilities that are built throughout the country. Certainly there is, but majority of what you're seeing in the processors is outdoor. You're seeing certainly more greenhouse cannabis going to the processors.
Interesting.
Makes sense.
Well, somehow it's already that time. Before we close out the show, I just wanted to ask you, Darren, as our guest, if you have any final thoughts you'd like to share or anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with.
You know, GrowGen, you know, again, you know, I am the CEO of GrowGen. I think we're the fastest growing, I think, cannabis company in the country right now. And it's been just an absolute honor to be the CEO of a company that is growing as quickly as us. And even more of an honor to, you know, to represent such wonderful clients and customers. You know, GrowGen represents a lot of the large MSOs around the country, over 1,500 single state operators. We have a staff of over 500 right now. So this company has grown so quickly, and we see tremendous growth ahead during this decade, and really, into many decades to come. And certainly look forward to coming back onto your show. Thank you for everything you guys do, and you do a wonderful job reporting. I read every day my New Frontier, and thank you for everything you do.
Oh, thank you. It is an honor. You mentioned it's an honor to be the CEO of that company. It's an honor to have you on the show. And then, John, any final thoughts for the audience before we wrap up?
Well, I think this is a phenomenally exciting time for the legal industry. You know, to everything Darren has said, for the scale of growth that we're about to see over the next 5 years, there's not only huge opportunity in terms of just outward expansion in production capacity, But I think there's huge opportunity to think in really disruptive ways about how to continue to optimize the efficiency of the way cannabis is grown. And for an industry that has, or for a product that has for so long been grown in the shadows, I think some of the lessons that are being learned in the American market right now on how to optimize efficiency across the entire operation, not just from not just for energy, but for water, for human capital use, will be the lessons that the rest of the world will learn from as cannabis becomes increasingly legal globally. So, you know, the utility here of this conversation is not just to help the current set of operators eke out every single dollar that they can out of their businesses by lowering costs, optimizing yields and maximizing outputs. But it also becomes a foundation for benchmarks on which this industry can continue to grow as it goes global. And we should have make no mistake about it that this industry still has a phenomenal amount of upside growth left, both in the US and globally.
Well said, John.
As always. Yeah. And as always, thank you all for joining us at CannaWeek. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. And if you'd like to find out when the Cannabis Water Report is live, be sure to sign up for our weekly cannabis newsletter by visiting www.yourcannabit.com. That's www.yourcannabit.com. I'm your host, Abby Kaufman, and I'll see you next week.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.